Welcome to Expounded Universe, Season 6, Episode 3, Crawling in My Skin. The book, Planet of Twilight, by Barbara Hambly. The year, I forgot. Chapters 5 and 6, with your hosts, Jeff and John. Sorry I forgot. Let's go!
Dragged me to Taytel. My jerk-off motion is one of the endless.
I mean, or, you know, you can just cover R2-D2 in flesh.
If I can be honest, John, whenever I hear the 2000 thing, my first response for, like, a pop culture reference is a Silverchair song.
That's weird.
Yeah, it's like, I'll make it up to you in the year 2000. And you can just hear their Australian snot-nosed punk bullshit.
Well, that brings up a very important question, which is, did Silverchair make it up to whoever in the year 2000?
I have to assume it's Annie. He's probably...
Well, is Annie okay?
I don't know if Annie's okay, but they do have a song called Annie's Song. And I assume that they were apologizing to Annie for all the frog stomping. Is that all the Silverchair jokes I can do? I think it is.
Is this all the Silverchair I got? Okay.
I'm done with Silverchair. Oh, wait, hang on. I could probably work in a couple of Chronicles of Narnia jokes.
The Chronic what?
The Chronicles of Narnia. The Chronic of Narnia. No wonder everyone thought that ape couldn't talk.
Couldn't talk.
Could and could not talk, respectively, depending on who was observing him and in what chapter.
That's weird.
Strong Christian overtones. Ah, when was the last time you read Chronicles of Narnia, like the whole 7 books?
Never.
You've never read them?
All 7? No.
Oh, which ones have you just read the first one then?
So I've done Lion, Witch, and the Wardrobe. I've done... I want to say the...
Second one's Voyage of the Dawn Treader.
No, it was like the Magician's Nephew.
Yeah, that's like the 5th one or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then that might be it.
Horse and His Boy.
No, I think...
Swiftly Tilting Planets.
I'm pretty sure it's just those two, which is...
Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. Wait, were you willing to buy Swiftly Tilting Planet?
I was willing to buy whatever you gave me. I've got an open wallet, and I'm willing to pay.
Swiftly Tilting Planet is a Madeline Lingle joint.
Madeline Lingle.
It's fun to say. You know, she's a Wind in the Door. What's the famous one that everyone...
Stitch in Time?
Yeah, is that the one? The one that people give a shit about?
Wrinkle in Time.
That's the one people give a shit about. I was willing to buy Stitch in Time.
There we go. We're both willing and able to buy just bullshit from each other at all times.
No problem. As long as it's from you, buddy.
Yeah, neither of us know what we're talking about, but at least the other person is ready to just jump on board yes and as hard as possible.
That's how we came up with Tracy Morgan Le Fay the other day.
Yeah. He's great. I love him.
He's so tired, Liz Merlin.
There ain't no party like a Liz Merlin party, because a Liz Merlin party ages backwards.
So anyway, welcome to Expounded Universe, the Star Wars novel discussion podcast, Expanded Universe novel discussion podcast. I'm Jeff. That's John.
Oh, boy.
And that prelude to our introduction is a good solid sampling of the kind of bullshit you can expect right here on the show.
It's a good solid little bit like you'd get from Costco. They just hand you just a sample of our bullshit, and you're like, ooh, do I want more of this bullshit?
Man, I was at Costco this morning, and there were not sample people out, and it was bliss.
Ha!
If I can, I'm sorry, I'm an old curmudgeon, I know. I have my little girl.
You piece of shit.
I was literally only at Costco to poop. I've been driving my daughter around trying to get her to fall asleep, and Costco was there when I needed to poop. They were a willing and waiting porcelain receptacle.
They were there for me when I needed to poop.
Now, granted, I have paid them $60 for that privilege.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But it was a fine poop, a discerning poop.
A fine poop.
Yeah. But no sample people, which I loved, because I know at that Costco, the sample people are basically just don't try to go through here, because people will park their cart wherever they are and just dead run over to the sample tray.
Ugh.
And so with none of them, everyone was just moving around. It was amazing.
There was actual flow.
Yeah. Heavy flow.
Yeah.
It was fantastic. Anyway, yeah, that's the kind of shit you can expect from us. You know, references to punk bands you forgot existed and whatever else the hell we were doing in that conversation. Oh, fake books.
Yeah, you know, real fake books.
Real fake books. Leave here with an armful of fake books under each arm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So this is going to be chapters 5 and 6 of Planet of Twilight, a book that takes a surprisingly long time to say a surprisingly small amount of stuff.
Man, this is, I'm going to go ahead and say it, this is even worse than the Crystal Star. for just wheel spinning.
I was going to say, there's a lot of different varieties of, I mean, we've only done 5 1/3 books so far, and we have, I think we have 5 different varieties of bad.
Yeah, this is so much, not even really wheel spinning where it was like, I'm going to have someone do an action that doesn't matter,
mm-hmm.
as much as it is like, I've got to just tell you about, like, what's going on in the background here for about 4 pages. Anyway, then Luke walked forward. Let me tell you 4 more pages of background description. I'm like, yeah, I get it, Hemingway. That's fine.
There's a mix of 2 kinds of annoying wheel spinning happening in this book that's just a soupçon of horrible. One of them is flowery descriptions of everything.
Yes.
And the other one is huge amounts of background detail that's got no connection to anything else in the Star Wars universe that just goes on at length. With just endless references to planets and names and people, none of which, every time I check Wikipedia, no one else gave a shit about any of this.
Well, no. All of this was just, I'm going to throw a name in here, because the rest of it is like, if it wasn't a background detail of the universe
mm-hmm.
that she was making up, then it was the movies, because in these...
Oh, there's all these callbacks to the movies. Oh,
in Chapter 5, specifically, it's all Luke. And anytime he thinks about the Force, it's always, well, on Dagobah, you know, when I was on Dagobah, when I was with Yoda and he taught me a thing on Dagobah, I'm like, come on, dude. Luke has lived a while now. Not every memory can be about Dagobah.
Yeah, this has been 13 years since Han met Leia, according to Chapter 6. So we know that he's had a 13-year career as a fine Jedi. He didn't retreat into the mountains or open a school or whatever happened in the movies.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's... It's really...
Well, I mean, he did open a school.
That is true. He did open a school. It's a very different school.
Yeah.
And he didn't get all butthurt when one of the kids went all rogue and evil and he had to put him down.
Yeah.
Instead, he was like, well, do better next time.
Yeah.
And then he changed the 0 on his time since one of our kids went evil to a 1 for the number of days. Okay, so... Wait, that would be bad.
Yeah, I know. I was like, wait, what?
Man, these kids are going bad constantly.
I can't even stop it.
I guess he changed it from a this has never happened to a this has happened once.
There
right. We go. The famous number, this has never happened.
Yep. Good. You know, it was really the Arabs that gave us the concept of this never happened as a number.
Yeah, it's weird that they call them Roman numerals. Wait, they don't. They call them Arabic numerals.
Well, yeah, they do.
Oh, geez, I'm in trouble today. Why don't we just talk about Silverchair? At least I know something about that.
Let's talk about something I know about.
Like Silverchair, a band who I never wanted to listen to and don't remember the songs.
Good.
So anyway, Chapter 5 is all Luke all the time. He has stolen an XP-38 landspeeder, which you would remember is the only landspeeder you're aware of. It's the one that he has in A New Hope. But this one's all shittier.
Well, yeah, his landspeeder in here, man, we are going to get pages of description on why this landspeeder is shitty and how angry he is at whoever was taking care of this, that they didn't take better care of it.
A lot of wistful ruminating on the fact that this planet has no imports and therefore all the vehicles are probably all crappy like this because they have to be maintained with insufficient tools.
And the, oh, well, you know, a piece of metal on a planet like this is worth a fortune gets brought up like 5 times.
That's why people who live on this planet could never even discard a rusty bucket.
Ugh.
And it's just, yeah. I mean, it's some of it's good. It's good, interesting description at first.
Yeah, no, the descriptions of the planet and its weird crystal nonsense, you're like, oh, cool, the first time you see it. You're like, oh, we've got a weird, like, crystal desert.
Yeah, I kind of appreciate the non-glamorous nature of the crystals in this book. I was kind of worried that it was going to be all, you know, glowy, translucent crystals that give everyone power and everything. But no, it's just a shitty desert that you can kind of see through.
Yeah, it's just, what is this? Well, instead of sand, it's crystals, but it's basically just, if there isn't water running through some place with some soil there, it's just crystals and it's garbage.
Yeah, it's just hot, shitty crystals. So, yeah, he's riding along in this XP-38 he has stolen, which has a busted repulsor or buoyancy coil or...
Both.
Nerd alert or something. Probably both.
Yeah, that's a busted nerd alert. There's a nerd alert.
Man, that's a great Aquabats song. Okay, so that's another thing I know enough about to talk about with confidence.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, Yeah, this thing's all listing to one side and crappy and scraping on the ground.
Like, he has to use the force in order to lift the ass of this thing up so it doesn't scrape on crystals.
How'd it get to him, then? That guy wasn't a Jedi, whatever crazy Theron old-timer that was.
Well, I mean, it was probably just busted.
Yeah, he's just scraping it on the ground. He didn't give a shit. But Luke does.
So Luke gives a shit.
So he's using the force to help him lift this thing, which gives you a good idea of how powerful he is at this point. That he's able to, you know, lift a ship and then fly it along.
Yeah.
Or at least lift it off the ground without that being a problem.
Well, I mean, he's mostly just helping. Because it's not like it's dragging.
Yeah.
The buoyancy coil or whatever is weak. Mm-hmm. So it's like, it doesn't need to be fully lifted off the ground. It just needs to have help.
Yeah.
Except for later when he does do that.
Yeah. So eventually, after riding through the desert towards what he's pretty sure is the nearest town, this thing starts to pretty much just give out, this XP-38.
Yeah.
It's going to putter out and die on him. So he starts looking for shade or food or something, and he passes across another parked land speeder.
Well, we got to get into something else first.
Sure, John. Tell me all about it.
That weird, dumb electrical thing.
That's okay. Thank you. Yeah. So as he's driving along, the force picks up some sort of problem, and he looks behind him, and there's a wave of lightning headed his way on the ground. Like,
yeah. So this is basically, he's like, all right, I've set my dumb speeder down, and it's garbage. It's useless at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And he sees this wave of lightning going across the ground, which basically, the way it's described, looks like Sith lightning, but just crawling on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And it is coming towards him, and he just spends like a good couple seconds going, huh, that's neat.
Yeah, like the neat lightning on the ground. That's an interesting natural phenomenon. I wonder what that is.
Oh, wait a minute. Hold on. That's bad if that hits me.
Yeah, and so he uses the force again to levitate himself up a bit so that it doesn't get him and it just passes by underneath.
Well, he levitates the entire speeder.
The entire speeder. Now, the lightning is kind of following the path of a riverbed, but also just sort of spilling out over the landscape a little bit.
Yeah, it is just a wave of lightning.
Yeah, so a wave of lightning goes by, and then he parks the land speeder, watches that go by, and then is like, okay, now I'm going to go find that dude who I was talking about a second ago.
Yeah, now I'm going to go find that dude who Jeff was talking about.
Yeah, the book gets really, really reflective, self-reflexive in there.
It's real weird. It kept calling me by name, yeah. Telling me to burn it all down. I don't know what that was about.
I had to go into it for a while and give the childlike empress a name.
I had to go in there for a while. Macaulay Culkin was there. Whoopi Goldberg was a book.
Ooh, wow, I have no idea what you're talking
about.
We're
doing Pagemaster now, okay. Baby.
Oh, that's good.
Hell yeah.
I mean, I like my never-ending story bit, but sure, I'm on board.
Yeah, but fuck you. I got another thing where someone goes into a book. What's up now?
That Futurama episode where the giant brain follows them through all the various stories. I'm a gigantic brain.
Good.
Great. The great brain am winning again, and now I will leave Earth for no reason.
Good.
There you go.
Great.
So there you go.
Thanks.
I've got it. I've got at least one more. I can keep doing this.
No, you can't.
Can't I?
Can't I?
Can I not?
Can I?
I'm pretty sure I can come up with at least one more pop culture thing about someone diving in and out of books. But Pagemaster's a really good one.
Yeah.
Yeah. So fine.
Who the fuck has thought about Pagemaster ever?
True. No one that I'm aware of.
No one has ever thought about it.
Probably Macaulay Culkin every now and again.
Maybe.
You know, in his quiet moments.
Quiet moments.
You know, right now he's the executive producer of Toe Jam and Earl 2.
Wow, I did not know that.
That's a true fact that's happening right now.
True fact.
As we speak, he is bankrolling a new Toe Jam and Earl game.
Man, that is...
Might be three.
I think it might be three. I know I saw a new Toe Jam and Earl thing on Steam,
mm-hmm.
And I was like, huh, okay.
Yeah, well, Macaulay Culkin's behind it.
Neat.
Yeah.
I'm super into that.
I'm kind of way into this Macaulay Culkin renaissance that's happening right now, if I can be honest with you.
The Macaulay Culkin renaissance.
The Macaulay-sance. Where he's just showing up on like random web videos and so on and just making fun of himself and just seems like, hey, fuck it, I'm a billionaire. What do I give a shit? I'll just have a good time. So at this point, Luke finds a guy.
Luke finds a guy.
Oh, I think we might have just found the name of the title of the book.
Luke finds a guy. Star Wars and Luke finds a guy.
I like the and.
Yeah.
No. So he finds a land speeder and sees a dude sitting in the shade working on something or other. I think he's picking up some minerals or scrapping some metals or...
He's just doing some generic, like, farm-type stuff because he's near one of the old prison areas.
Yes.
And
if you've forgotten that, that's because this used to be a prison planet.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there's like a little stream that runs past here, and it's like the only place where any vegetation grows.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's out here just like getting water and fucking around, I guess.
He's just doing desert guy stuff.
Yeah.
Well,
although the fact that Luke at this point as well, this is more Dagobah nonsense, which is going to come up like 15 times.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, ooh, you know what I've got to do? I've got to cloak myself so that I'm inconspicuous and no one looks at me using the Force. A thing that Yoda told me about, and I'm pretty sure that's how old Ben got through the Death Star without anybody noticing him.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's close that loophole that everyone was really worried about.
Yeah, also, Callista probably mentioned this at some point, too.
Oh, Callista taught me, but Yoda mentioned it. Have I mentioned Dagobah? This planet reminds me of that for no reason.
I like the part where there's a woman he's going to meet in a bit who's like an Aunt Beru type figure, and he's like, she kind of looks like Aunt Beru. I mean, not really, but kind of, because it's a desert planet and she's an old lady.
I mean, sort of. She reminds me of Aunt Beru in that
it's a desert planet
she
and she's an old lady.
Here.
Yeah, it's just so they're so desperate to connect this thing to Dagobah. But yeah, he instead of just going, hey man. He uses the Force to, like, cloak, make himself less noticeable.
For, like, 2 minutes, and then he walks up and he's like, hey, dude.
Yeah.
Like, oh, good job. You did it. You freaked him out. Instead of, like, walking up and him hearing you walking up and him being able to react to it, you get within, like, 2 feet of him, and then you're like, hey, what's up? And he's like, holy shit!
And he's like, oh, wow, you must be the guy who came down in that B-Wing a second ago, huh? Because I haven't seen you around here before.
Yeah, and obviously you don't live out in the Crystal Desert, or you would be dead.
Yeah, or, you know, all scruffy and shitty looking like me.
You're definitely not a Theron.
Yeah. So Luke's like, yeah, man, whoever told me that B-Wings could make it through the gun emplacement was a liar. And this guy, whose name, by the way, is Arvid Scraff.
Arvid Scraff.
Mm-hmm.
Scraff.
So Scraff basically says, oh, yeah, you know, those gun turrets aren't only automated. If they're warned that someone's going to come down, they could just turn them on and control them manually.
I mean, if the Therons are in there, they'll just shoot at whatever.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter.
So it's not surprising you got shot at. Plus, you probably modified that B-Wing for cargo, didn't you? Because other people have tried. Anyway,
listen, the only reason you'd be down here is because you're some kind of dude smuggling stuff in here. Obviously, you're not a secret Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
And looks like, yeah, of course I've died.
But also, instead of having that conversation right away, how about we have a conversation about the technical specs of the B-Wing for a while first? Because people love that.
Yeah, let's just get this page count going. Come on, guys.
How much per word?
Ugh.
So Arvid turns out to be a nice dude who reminds Luke of a young Luke because he's a desert guy who lives in the desert. And he's all scrappy.
Yeah. And Luke tells him, he's like, hi, my name is Owen Lars.
You know, famously the father of a famous Jedi guy or the uncle of a famous Jedi guy.
No, he's not famous.
I guess no one knows who Owen Lars is. Fine.
Yeah.
But still, that was kind of a lame name. I was kind of hoping for a gay Ahab situation. That's not just me, right? If you'd been like, yeah, hi, you can call me...
I'm Pan Ishmael.
You can call me Bi-Curious Queequeg. Yeah, that seems like a normal name to me.
Yep.
What with there's definitely a senator running around in this universe named Q-Varks who keeps getting mentioned.
Yeah, this is Star Wars. There's no name you could tell me that I would ever blink at and be like, my goodness.
I was just disappointed when I found out what species Q-Varks is. I was kind of hoping for a robot or something.
Q-Varks? I mean, that just sounds like it should be a furry.
It's a fishy.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Like, I was hoping for some kind of Nalronian.
I was kind of hoping for a K-Pax situation.
A K-Pax situation?
Yeah, where it's like Kevin Spacey, but maybe he's an alien and you're not sure. Come on. Do you know the movie K-Pax?
No, I know!
No one's
the movie K-Pax.
No one's forgotten the movie K-Pax, John. Everyone remembers it very well.
Oh, everyone remembers it and thinks fondly on their memories of K-Pax and Kevin Spacey right now.
I think Kevin Spacey is currently experiencing a career renaissance. But, like, from the peasant perspective and not from the people who could afford to make art.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, everything's great around here. I mean, not for me, but, you know.
I'm still digging through shit looking for shiny hay pennies, but, you know, I sure am glad the art scene's picking up.
But, you know, that guy seems to enjoy his paintings, so that's nice.
I love that Caravaggio.
Well, I'm not allowed to see the church, but, you know, I hear it's very nice inside.
Yeah. Yeah. So, anyway, Kevin Spacey sucks. K-Pac sucks. Mets suck. Yankees suck.
Krypton sucks.
So yeah, they have a long, boring conversation, and then the upshot of it is that Arvid is a nice enough guy that he's like, hey, not only will I help you drag that shitty XP-38 into town so you can sell it to someone as scrap.
Which, you know, I feel like there's a lot going on there where he's like, oh, we got to go get your shitty thing back because, you know, I would like some money out of that.
Well,
so.
He, there's no point where he's like, also, I'll take a cut of any of this. He's just the nicest fucking guy.
Yeah, no, I was really expecting it to be one of those situations where he's like, oh, yeah, the reason I want to go help you get your broken down speeder or
the
check out your B-wing.
Yeah.
Is, oh, yeah, we need to help you get your stuff back. Also, I want 15%.
Yeah, except that never happens.
No, he's just wasting his resources out of the kindness of his heart.
Yeah, local dope offers to help Luke, basically, is what happens here. So that's exactly what he offers. He's like, hey, I'll help you drag your land speeder into town, because obviously selling that thing for scrap is going to be the only money you'll have. But there might still be some chunks of B-Wing left, so we should head out there and see.
We should get some B-Wing chunks.
Because those are going to sell even better. So let's go see what's up. And as they're going back to Arvid's speeder, which Lord knows we get a fun description of that, Luke realizes that there's some paint on his leg and a couple of plasticky-looking purple welts.
Yep. And then he realizes, oh no, those are bugs. That's chitin. Those dudes are burrowing into me.
So he notices that a bug has just recently burrowed into his leg, manages to pinch it at the source, and using the force, shoves it back out of himself.
He basically just pinches a bug out of his leg and is like, ew.
Yeah, it's like a little centipede thing, like fingernail length with a ringed mouth that it burrows. It's a little burrowy bug.
I just imagined it looking like a small beetle.
Yeah, I'm something like that. I kind of pictured a sort of a lamprey centipede kind of thing, but sure.
I don't know why. It's not like we get that in the description.
No. It's described as multi-legged with a ringed mouth. A ringed mouth.
A ringed mouth.
That's the part that gave me kind of lamprey feel, was the ring mouth. But sure, it's just a beetle. It's just
they've
a
got
beetle.
Ring mouth.
It's just a beetle with a ring mouth.
If you look into this beetle's mouth, you'll die in 7 days.
It's a juicy jewel of flavor, ring mouth.
Two different directions.
I know, but I like both of them, and it's fine.
It's fine. You get your choice of stupid references here.
Mm-hmm.
Did you want the movie reference, or did you want the candy reference?
I mean, we could probably do a few more references if that's what you need.
I mean, we could do some more ring references.
Rings are pretty common jokes.
Yeah, I mean, I could say that he's taken the ring mouth to, I don't know, Mordor.
Mount Doom. Yeah. Something. Anyway, Arvid's like, hey, those things are called Drox, and don't worry about it. They burrow into you, and then they dissolve in you.
Now he's like, look, don't try and really do it. Like, you can't do anything about them.
Yeah,
they are everywhere. They get killed by the sun, but if you're ever in any sort of shade, they will just burrow the fuck into you.
And then he's
like, and they will dissolve in you, which I cannot understand the life cycle of a Drock. It's like, what do? Oh, I burrow into an animal and then die.
I bet if enough of them burrow into an animal, you get a disease. I mean, think about it, John. These are the local purple bugs. Leia saw local purple bugs.
Oh, I know.
And then Dazeem is a local purple bug.
Well, that might have just been a weird dream she had. Or she might have just seen that he had a whole bunch of bugs, like, burrowed into his arm or something.
You think he's, like, mostly Drock? Like, he spends all of his time he's a normal human, but he spends all his time lying in a big Drock cave and getting all Drocked up.
Well, yeah, one of the things that Scraff says is that some people, when they're, like, out in the desert and they're, like, low on
they're
food
desperate.
Or whatever,
they're starving, yeah.
They'll shove their arm into a hole somewhere, get it covered in these Drock that burrow into them, and then they dissolve and give them nutrients, essentially.
Yeah, you get all them arm-delivered nutrients by just sticking your arm into a Drock hole.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to have a bunch of little burrow holes all over your arm, but at least it's better than starving.
It's kind of a neat idea that these things dissolve, and then you get the calories from that.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's one of the things where I'm like, but normally if you were something that would do that, you would, I don't know, lay eggs or something before you dissolved, but I guess no. I guess these guys are just like, we're just happy to help.
It's just a special biology thing. Because, I mean, imagine if you were to, like, carve open your arm and sew a ravioli in there. That's not going to give you a ravioli's worth of calories. It's just going to get infected and kill you. But apparently these bugs work different.
Oh,
so
yeah.
That's fine. So those are the local Drocks, and I'm sure they're very, very important. So
I'm sure.
Mark that down.
But, like, they're dissolving isn't just like, oh, they kind of die and you absorb them. They, like, disappear. Because at one point, Luke uses the Force to try and kind of find one that's in his leg. And then he, like, sees it dissolving in his mind. Like, its life force just kind of goes, bloop.
Yeah, it just disappears. And eventually he can't find it even in his bloodstream or the Force signature of it or anything.
No, it just becomes part of it.
It's just, yeah, it just becomes some Luke energy, like a sewed-in ravioli.
But it took, like, 3 seconds for that to happen. He was like, oh, there's a bug in there.
Yeah. So I hear if you sew a lifesaver into your arm, it freshens your breath still.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So Arvid's speeder is even more sideways.
Arvid's speeder has
it's charmingly ramshackle. Yeah, like, it's so sideways because its buoyancy coils are fucked up that he's built planks into it to straighten out the floor.
Like, he has, like, ballast to shift the weight so that it isn't all tilted and fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
And then he also has a wheel in the back so that when it starts to dip, the wheel will just
Which, honestly, that showed up in Episode 8, those little salt skimmers. This is very much like the salt planet crate. In that it's covered in translucent crystals.
Yeah.
But same thing here, he uses a wheel on his speeder so that it won't bang into the ground.
Yeah.
And he steers it like straight up with a rudder instead of with like a steering wheel or something.
Yeah,
like,
he's got a weird fucked up hover boat thing going on right now.
This is the part where I was almost kind of on board, is this thing so ramshackle and well-described ramshackle that I was like, oh, cool, this is like a Mad Max planet. I'm into this.
Yeah, and, you know, Luke is looking at it going like, oh god, this is garbage. And he goes, oh no, don't let the look fool you, this has got some real juice in her. And
what,
like,
a piece of junk, says Luke, just like in the movie A New Hope.
You remember the Millennium Falcon, because then Luke says, you know, just like the Millennium Falcon.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, oh, you didn't need to say it,
we all remember the movies,
come on. But
I
no
get paid by the word.
Yep, he's got to go, oh yes, this is indeed a piece of junk. However, it maneuvers better than you would think, much like the Millennium Falcon my friend Han flew.
Yeah.
You remember 13 years ago in A New Hope?
Because the Millennium Falcon, like Han himself, has hidden depths.
It's got layers, like an onion.
Also, Chewbacca's there.
Chewbacca's here.
I'm not part of this metaphor. I'm pacing out of the metaphor.
Arn.
I'm going to go play Wookiee Clicker.
And indeed he did.
Much Wookiees were clicked that day. All right. Well, anyway, they managed to rig up the XP-38 and tow it. They get out to where the B-Wing is, and it has been stripped down to the soft chunks. There's nothing left.
Oh, yeah. They took, like, anything they could find. Just bits of cushion.
Mm-hmm.
They took any large metal scrap. It's basically just little pieces that flew off into the distance and scattered,
mm-hmm,
to the point where it'd be like, oh, it's too much trouble to go try and pick up, like, a few square inches of metal from, like, the middle of a fucking crystal desert.
Yeah. So, well, you know, he's consoling to Luke. It looks like it really doesn't matter. I just need to get to town. I need a little bit of money so I can make it across to town and I can get back on my...
get to that Hoegschul.
He really wants to get back to his investigation, and he's also kind of worried about whatever's up with Leia, maybe.
He's convinced Arvid that he's like, ooh, I'm a smuggler, and
yeah,
I need a little bit of capital, but don't tell anybody I'm here because... I still owe on the things I lost in the crash. And
yeah.
So he's basically pretending to be Han,
yes,
is what he's doing.
Yeah, he's pretending to be a Han named Owen Lars.
Yeah.
And it would be great if he were like, yeah, my name's Han. Han Solo.
Like, oh, Han Solo? General Han Solo?
No, smuggler Han Solo. Oh, smuggler Han Solo? I'm Owen Lars.
Uncle Owen Lars?
Shoot, I'm a Brew. Brew Lars.
Brew Newbie Boo.
Newbie Boo. Oh, Brew Newbie Boo?
The famous singer? All right, I'm out.
No, that's me. I'm Brew Newbie Boo, the famous singer. Yep, that's the one.
Please regale me with a song.
I'd love to, but my throat fell out in the crash.
I lost my throat in the crash.
How are you talking right now? I'm not.
Psychoactive drugs. I'm on glitter stim.
I'm not talking right now. You just think I am because of how expressive my face is.
I got that going for me.
Anyway, this is also a chance for Luke to ask some questions about the Theran old timers.
Yes.
And we learn some new information about them. Notably that almost everyone in town eventually joins the old timers for a while and then quits.
Basically, he pretty much goes along with a description that, like, the old timer society is like they've got a rite of passage where you'll just sort of go hang out with the old timers and, like, be on a trip for a while and mm-hmm. then come back. You just sort of get a Rumspringa, but it's in reverse because you go hang out with the Amish.
Yeah, but it's interesting because it's like embarrassing to be an old timer to most of the people who live on the planet. It's a lot like you go off and go to a MAGA rally or something. You're just like, crazy, fucking reactionary, because blah. And then you're like, oh, wait, I do need to get a job at some point.
Oh, hold on. I got to do something with my life.
Let me just delete my Facebook. Good thing I didn't get a face tattoo. Yeah. So that's pretty much what the old timers are. It's a broad cross-section of population, but they're almost all just middle-aged angry dudes.
Yeah. And they've got someone that is called the listener, who tells them what to think, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Who's like, oh, I know what's best for everyone. And everyone just sort of gets brainwashed by the listener.
Yeah.
And so no matter what you say to them, they'll just be like, we don't want that.
So at this point, they sail across the desert back towards
a horse with no name.
A horse with no name. They try to go back to Arvid's Aunt Jin's house.
Ah, yes. Aunt Jin.
Because Jin's going to help him out.
Jin is definitely going to help him out.
Yeah, Jin's exactly what everyone needs at the moment.
Just a big old glass of Aunt Jin.
Just a pint of Aunt Jin, if you follow. Jin apparently is just, friendly enough that they'll let Luke stay in her house for a while, and then also help him get into town. Just because, again, he's happened across the friendliest people in the desert.
Oh, yeah.
Just good luck.
He's like, oh, I live with my Aunt Jin, and she'll let you stay the night, and there's no problem. We'll let you have some food here, and we'll get you money. We know who to sell your speeder to.
Yeah.
We know who to talk to if you want to find out anything that's happening in town. We're like, Jesus, dude, you are like the one person that he needed to meet.
Hey, do you also need my leg?
I've got three. I'm not human. I don't know if I mentioned it.
I'm the only Canadian on Nam Chorios.
Canadians famously have three legs.
And we'll give you one for free.
Here you go. Sorry, have a leg.
That's pretty much what's happening. So at this point, they make their way to the outskirts of town, where an extremely confusing thing is happening that Luke watches through binoculars. And he does the whole thing as like a woman did something, and then a speeder was going somewhere, and then a man came out, and then a thing happened to that man. And then Luke adjusted his macro binoculars and could tell that a thing was happening to the woman from earlier. So you don't know what the fuck is going on.
Like, I get that what's happening is the townies, the newcomers,
mm-hmm.
are attacking one of the gun emplacements.
Yeah.
The fight, though, ends up being, like, it's weird because they're all shooting at each other, except the people on top that are like the Therans who control the gun emplacement, who are just like throwing rocks and javelins and shit.
Well, yeah, they're old timers.
Yeah. And so, but they get a speeder and like modify it so that it just starts floating up the side of the thing.
Yeah, one of the things is Luke takes a long time to point out that they have a speeder racing towards the gun emplacement, which is flying way too high for a speeder, and he's like, that's super dangerous unless the wind has really died down today. They must have some kind of special thing. And then sure enough, it gets to the wall. It just starts flying up the wall.
Yeah, they're just like, oh, we've got a group of dudes. This is going to be how we storm the wall, mm-hmm. is we got a bunch of dudes on this speeder, and we're going to float it up to the top of the wall.
Yeah.
But then there's a lady who appears to be some kind of ninja with a whole thing of grenades.
I couldn't tell what side she was on. Is she an old timer?
No, she blew up the.
She
blew up the speeder.
Yeah, see, that's the thing is, if they're raiding the gun emplacement, then
it's weird because she's on the side of the old timers, but she's like some weird ninja with a pouch full of grenades. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on here?
So she blows up the speeder, but the speeder is on the good guy's side. So presumably it's just a bomb.
Well, there's no good guy's side.
Okay,
here.
Well, she's on the newcomer side. They rigged
No,
up-
she's on the old timer side.
I just asked you a second ago if she was an old timer, and you were like, no.
No, she's not an old timer. She's on their side, though, is what
oh,
I'm
okay.
thinking.
All right. So she's not necessarily an old timer because she's too ninja.
Well, what I was thinking was, that's Callista.
Oh, okay. We're thinking that's Callista.
That's what I'm
and the,
thinking.
And the Callista, for whatever reason, is on the old-timer side. I'm going to tell you what I'm thinking, John. Callista's not on this planet.
Yeah, well, that's fine.
Yeah.
You can think whatever you want.
I can. I'm glad that my
You've read this book before, so you can tell me. You can spoil it right now if you want to.
I read this book 22 years ago. I have literally no memory of it. I don't remember where I was 2 days ago. I've got Swiss cheese dad brain.
That's right.
So you can trust that all of my speculation about what's going on in here is genuine. I have no fucking remembrance. And let's be honest, you've read 6 chapters of this now. You know that's true. You're not going to remember this in a week.
Oh, that's very accurate, because...
Now try remembering it in 22 years.
This is 100 pages of fucking nothing.
So this ninja lady comes swinging out of the old-timer building, lobs some grenades into the speeder, and then gets away, and the speeder blows up.
Yeah, because the reason I was thinking it was Callista is because she's straight like, oh, I know exactly where to hide so you can't shoot me, and then while I'm swinging, I'm spinning in such a way that you can't shoot me, and I drop grenades, and I then swing on back to the other side where I was before. I'm like, okay, this is someone who isn't just, oh, I've been on this planet. I'm a farmer. I'm an old-timer, and I've been here for a while. And
no,
it's also
she's
not
like merc training and stuff.
Yeah, it's also not going to be like, I am a newcomer. I'm here to farm. She seems like a weird fucking ninja, which is why I was like, okay, that's got to be Callista or something.
That's some kind of tactical badass. Now, Luke never goes, wow, that person's amazing. I wonder if it's Callista.
No. He's just like, huh, all right, well, they blew up that speeder. No questions.
Just more stuff about macro binoculars. The speeder gets blown up before it can raid the building, and the newcomers
everything just devolves into fist fighting.
Yeah, and then eventually the newcomers retreat.
Yeah, the whole thing is just we're fighting real good, and then a thing comes in and the emplacements start shooting at it, and basically it turns out that this was probably just a distraction to stop this gun from shooting on what's coming in.
Yeah, and Luke looks up and tries with the macro binoculars and figures it's a chunk of Seti Ashgad's ship.
Yeah.
And he knew that Seti Ashgad's ship was there, and then it could split into 6 little ships so it wouldn't get shot at by the emplacements. So it would make very much sense if the newcomers were distracting, because they're technically on Seti Ashgad's side or payroll or something.
They are on his side because he wants to open up trade.
Yeah.
But they're also like, oh, Ashgad's like the only one bringing shit in here.
Yeah.
So they were told that, like, oh, what was actually coming in was a shipment of, like, droids and parts.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. And it isn't a shipment of droids and parts. It's a shipment of Princess Leia's.
Yep. A whole bunch of them.
Yep. They got
just
more
stacked like cordwood.
Mm-hmm. Just like 15 Malariushes. So at this point, Luke and Arvid go off to join the newcomers as they go back to their town.
Yeah, their little hardscrabble settlement. And
he meets up with a couple of local characters.
Yep, there's some guy who's a huge asshole.
Yeah, that's Gurney or something like that.
Yeah, Guernica.
Yeah, it's definitely Guernica, the painting with the horse that everyone knows.
Yeah. And
that's the best way to refer to that piece of Picasso work, too.
That's it.
The painting with the horse.
You know, the painting with the horse. Everyone knows it.
Isn't it actually about a Spanish Civil War or something? Mm. Nope. Definitely the horse in the middle.
Oh, no. It's a painting with a horse.
It's the famous painting with horse. And if you're like most people, you've only ever seen it in art history class, which means you're not even sure about the horse, because it's always a 2-page spread and the horse is always caught in the book crease.
But yeah, this guy is a huge dickbag. He hates everything, and he's just grumpy and wants to kick out the old-timers, and also doesn't have a problem with slavery?
Oh, yeah, he's really into slavery and has a lot to say on the subject.
He's like, oh, if they won't let us have droids, they could at least let us have slaves.
Yeah, the slaves are a specific species called bandies. The bandies are apparently only a little bit sentient.
Yeah, they're like, oh, well, someone just faked the sentience test for them. Some bleeding heart liberal.
Yeah, he like literally says bleeding heart liberal.
Yeah.
This book is weird.
And Luke, at that point, is just like on the verge of beating the shit out of this guy. And he's like, they are sentient. You will shut the fuck up.
I have met them. They don't have a lot of sentience, but they do have gifts.
They have sentience. In fact, more than some people I've met, like you, you fuck man.
Now, they also meet a nice lady named Umali Darm.
Yeah.
Who... just some lady.
Some lady.
And then Aunt Jin.
And Aunt Jin,
who's very much more savvy than Arvid is. She's like, why are you bringing me this guy? And he's like, hey, Aunt Jin, I done promised this here out-of-town revenuer that he could stay in the barn. And she's like, God damn it.
You fuck. You dumb asshole. No, I mean, she's nice.
She's nice, but she's much more savvy than Arvid.
But we also, during the exchange with the various newcomers when they're headed back to town, we find out about the electrical wave.
Yes, an electrical wave done struck the gun emplacement building.
Yeah, they were like, oh, yeah, the... I think it's probably, you know, you hear stories that the listener or whatever, the Theran priests have powers and maybe they did this thing. And it turns out that the electrical wave started the same time that Luke used his powers to save himself from the B-Wing thing.
Yeah. And he's like, oh, shit, it's me. I caused that storm. And the storm done fucked up the town.
Yeah. But the weird thing is, it's not like when he used his powers to lift a speeder and hang out above the storm, anything happened.
Yeah, or when he pretended to not be there until he was 2 feet away from Arvid.
Yeah, or when he was checking himself for bugs. Like, none of that force use did anything. Just the one.
The dust cloud. When he did the dust cloud stomp, that, which almost makes sense, because the ground lightning. So he did a dust cloud stomp. That could also kick off a natural static electricity lightning wave if the planet bends that way, I guess.
The planet bends that way.
If it's into it.
If the planet is, you know, willing to get into it a little.
A little bit of a bicurious Queequeg, if you will.
A little bit.
But yeah, he... God damn it, now I want that shirt.
Panishmail.
Panishmail. Call me Panishmail. Also, so he's like, shit, I did that. But he also, back when the first lightning wave went by, he had this moment where he was like, wait a minute, I'm picking up life. Like, the force powers. My force sense is telling me that something alive is around here, and that doesn't make any sense, because everything around here is dead. But I guarantee you that's
but you what, know what Yoda told me
what
was.
What Ben Kenobi said. What Callista's instructor, Djinn, told me at one point was, I can't use Jedi powers unless I reference a previous Jedi.
Yeah, no, but this chapter is so much of, Yoda told me that... the life is there, and it finds a way, and do you dig up dinosaur bones?
But anyway, Luke's too dunderheaded to put together the sci-fi book conventions that definitely the planet's alive.
Yeah.
The crystals are alive or whatever.
This is some weird crystal planet.
Yeah, and they react to force with like a defense mechanism. So, I mean, put it together, dumbass. You've been on a living crystal planet before. You know what's going on.
You know.
This isn't even your first example of this particular trope.
But yeah, now he's like, oh, I feel guilty because I started a weird electrical thing.
Well, it did fuck up these newcomers' town. Their town is all like a bunch of shit went all crazy, and he actually killed a guy.
Oh, yeah. Some guy was at a forge, and it like blasted the heat out of it onto mm-hmm. a dude.
Yeah.
And they're like, I don't think he's going to make it.
Oh, one guy just straight up died. The other one's in critical condition, and they're like, he's probably going to die.
Yeah.
So he's already killed one, probably two people, by his force use.
How many more?
How many more must die to Owen Lars, the fake smuggler?
So, yeah. He is sad about that, but...
mad about you.
Djinn is like, hey, you want to... let's get you in here. But, you know, you're a strapping young lad. You want to work?
Sorry. No, it's work.
On my junk? Do you want to plow the fields, if you know what I mean? The old back nine?
No, they say that Namchorios is a dry and barren planet, but I know a place.
I know of a fertile crescent, if you will.
No, Aunt Djinn doesn't hit on him.
No.
Aunt Djinn is... this is the lady where he's like... she's like Aunt Beru. You know, not so much in looks or
attitude. I mean, doesn't look anything like Aunt Beru, but...
But she's a lady who lives on a desert planet, so she's like Aunt Beru.
Yeah, and she just wants him to stay and work for her. She's like, you're a hard working,
fighting,
strapping,
hard
fucking... you're trucking and fucking... why don't you stay here? I can't pay you much, but you will gain exposure to bugs.
And desert radiation. Come on, stick around. There's an arm wrestling contest.
And he's like, no, I'm good. I'm just going to sell this speeder off and then head to Hwegshul.
Yeah, and they're like, all right, well, my cousin, a second cousin or something, is like, he owns the largest library in on Namchorios, and so you might be able to go talk to him, and he might be able to help you find the information you're looking for on planet.
Yeah,
and if not him, then Seti Ashgad.
Yeah, this person keeps track of all of the travel nonsense on this planet, so if someone came through, they most likely came through on Hwegshul.
Yeah.
And if they did, then this person will know.
Yeah, I didn't even bother remembering the librarian guy's name, because that's just more...
it doesn't matter.
It's just...
none of this matters.
None of this fucking... bandies don't matter, even if they make good slaves, apparently.
Ugh.
So, anyway, you want to jump to chapter 6? You think we got enough chapter 5?
Yeah, I'm trying to think. That's basically all we get out of here.
Yeah, I think he just goes out and sits in the desert and looks at the sky or something. And he's like, hey, I think this planet might be alive. Also, there's bugs on it. And oh, he does go, there's a part where he spends a long time looking at all the plants that the newcomers are growing. And like, ah, I recognize all of these plants, and now I shall list them.
Yes, here's Clibble Crabs and Crabobdables.
Yeah, he's like, and that one's called Mamie, and those are Fliffins. And oh, here comes some Schnucks. It just goes on like that for a while. And there's bat mosquito kind of animals that he hates called Nathans.
Yeah.
And he's like, this stupid planet covered in Drox and Nathans.
Nathans hot dogs.
Yeah, it's Nathans. The planet's covered in Drox and Nathans.
Yep.
So yeah, that's enough of him. Meanwhile, chapter 6 begins. And we finally see a new character. What's up with Han Solo?
That's right. We are 100 pages in. Mm-hmm. That's where chapter 6 starts. And we have just seen the first of Han Solo. Jesus Christ, book. Fucking move it along. We are 25% of the way through. Over 25% of the way through. And we haven't even been introduced to all of the main characters yet.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Now, Han is hanging around in his indoor, but under a big balcony, because they're rich.
This is where they put up diplomats that they want to impress.
Yes.
They have to specifically say that, like, we can't say that this is what Leia owns or Han owns, because then they seem like rich assholes. But if we just say that they're in lavish, ridiculous surroundings, but it's because the people are putting them up there.
Yeah,
that's better.
This whole chapter is the book going hard into Nancy Myers mode, like where it's just lavish descriptions of cornices and crown molding. Like we just get so much crap about how nice this house is.
The worst part is that it's from Han Solo's perspective, and I'm like, Han doesn't give a shit.
Well,
he's not gonna sit there and be like, oh, the flowery molding on this is quite exquisitely done, whoever the craftsman was. And I'm like, he doesn't care.
Yeah, Han is wandering around an apartment-sized kitchen wearing a white turtleneck and drinking a glass of Chablis. No, okay, so actually what he's doing is sitting poolside when this chapter starts, as his two little kids, two of the twins, paddle around in the water accompanied by the Leia lookalike bodyguard intelligence officer with a perfect memory, who is now their nanny, Winter.
Yes.
This is our first time ever seeing her in this book.
Yep.
So Winter is paddling around with them, swimming fish-like, according to Han.
Oh, yeah. And Anakin is alive, but a wee bab inside a, like,
force-retaining bubble?
He's in some sort of force.
Well, he's not in the force bubble. No one here is a Jedi.
No, but a force field thing.
Yeah, he's in, like, a deflecting play place.
Like, instead of going, here's a box, stay in there, they're like, oh, well, we've got to create a little force field around you so mm-hmm. you don't crawl out somewhere.
That's the future of childcare. You just put him in a force box. So he's trapped in a shield, which he is gently exploring the edges of. He's trying to find a way out.
He's like, eh?
No? Okay.
Yeah, I'm a baby.
They test it every day. These Anakins are getting smarter. You'll see an Anakin in front of you, but the attack will come from the left.
You don't see Anakin coming in from the side.
Clever girl. So anyway, so the family's all hanging out. Han is looking at a computer, which is displaying a bunch of repeated messages that are basically, he calls them scramble nines, and they're like emergency alerts or something.
That he, I guess, doesn't have the ability to unscramble?
Yeah, I think
that's... Because he's like, boy, I sure wish 3PO was here.
Yeah, where's Goldenrod when you need him?
Where's a nice Goldenrod when you need it?
Someone call me Wedge Antilles. It's time for that unspoken tension to get more spoken.
Let's speak to tension.
So yeah, he's complaining that there's no droid who can help him decrypt all these weird messages. Lord knows C-3PO is the only protocol droid in the universe, so...
Yeah. It's the only way you could possibly decode anything.
The basic gist is that he knows something's gone wrong with Leia's mission.
She's late. She's very late.
Yes, she's late. And he's like, well, what I would like to happen at the moment is for her to send me an email that just says, hey, Han, I pulled the entire fleet over so I could buy shoes.
Hey, we had a impromptu meeting about something on some planet.
Cyblock 12.
And then we went to... to Coruscant and had another meeting, and then I went and got shoes, and sorry, didn't email you. Bye.
Yeah, he wants this to just be a sexist thing he can write off. Where he's just like, ah, yeah, she pulled the entire fleet aside for shoes. That's my wife.
Yeah, that's my wife. That's Leia for you. Always wanting shoes and fucking up protocol. Yeah.
So, and he does know that she's on a secret mission, that the mission that she's on is literally, it would bury her politically if anyone knew she was doing it, because she's not meeting with the elected representative of the planet. She's meeting with some guy.
Yeah. Which I don't know why that would bury you politically.
I know. I like this, apparently you can only meet with like the king of any given planet. And if you meet with someone else from the planet, it's like bad for you.
Yeah. Cause I was like, okay, it's not like this is a planet in the New Republic. The whole point is that the old timers don't want to be in it.
Yeah.
Which means if she met with someone that wanted to be in the New Republic, you would think that they wouldn't be like, oh, scandal. You'd be like, oh yeah, obviously that makes sense. You'd want to meet with someone that wants to join you.
Well, apparently everything that we're learning about the New Republic at the moment indicates that the Senate is basically a near deadlock. Yeah. On every single decision.
Well, it's just because of the sentience thing and the
Daystar Council or whatever they're calling them, guys who are like into sentience. But basically, if any kind of political turmoil gets out of any sort, anything, a scrap that can be used to attack people, it will be.
Yeah.
Now, Han spends some time reflecting on how all the droids in the house look like they were built for the house.
Yeah.
He's just
This was Palpatine's old villa.
Oh, so this is the Skyhook of Palpatine. Where the gardener was pretty good until he died in that turbo lift accident.
I mean, it's not, but yeah.
I mean, I guess Palpatine probably just had a lot of villas.
The rationalists and the rights of sentience. That's what I was trying to find.
Yeah, the rights of sentience are the ones who are calling themselves the Daystar or something. Or other.
Yeah, and then there are the rationalists.
Yeah.
Who don't care about sentience for some reason.
Well, it's the specific fight they're having at the moment is over synth droids, where the Daystar people are like, hey, they're made of meat, so they count as sentient.
Well, the whole thing, they're like, droids are sentient.
Yeah.
They should be afforded rights, and the rationalists are like, nah.
I mean, the whole thing in this book where droids apparently are not afforded rights is weird to me. And I don't remember where the 3PO part of this week's episode falls in. Is it at the end here?
Yeah, it's basically at the end of
this. So it's still coming. All right, good.
Yeah.
All right, well, anyway, Han mopes around his house for a while trying to figure out what he's going to do and kind of being mad at Leia for not reacting to the situation she's stuck in the way he would have.
And I feel like we get a description of Chewbacca coming out of a pool and shaking himself off like a dog.
Yeah, that's pretty great. And not only that, but apparently Jaina is currently in a braiding phase, and so she spends all day just braiding Chewbacca.
Yeah, so he's just got parts of him in braids.
Yes, just one of his arms is mostly braided. So that's pretty great to learn about.
Yeah.
It's nice to get a little Chewbacca check-in.
Just a little bit of Chewbacca nonsense before we leave him again.
I feel like the Chewbacca check-in is the kind of thing we should do that has stingers, like some music cues and so on, because all these books sideline him so hard.
Oh, yeah. It's just, and now, what's Chewbacca doing? He is in the background.
Harning.
He has an opinion about meat.
Yeah.
And now back to the story.
So, anyway, he shakes himself off. Now, at this point, a voice from inside the villa is like, oh, Han, you have two people outside. They have refused to announce who they are.
I'm Shitty Butlertron.
Would you like me to detain them, or will you just let them in? And Han's like, oh my god, just let them in.
Yeah, he's like, I don't want to just sit there and like spy on them before we decide if we're letting them in. Just Jesus, I don't care.
I just remember what happens. At this point, the door opens, and he sees who it is, and he says, I've got a bad feeling about this.
Yeah.
And then we cut to C-3PO.
Yep.
We don't get to know who they are until, the suspense must be killing you, because you won't find out until later in the same chapter.
That's right, until 15 pages later, because these chapters are enormous and do nothing.
The other funny thing is that he's like, oh my god, if it's these two people, then things must have really gone bad. Who are the two people? Well, it's Mon Mothma and some fucking guy.
And her bodyguard.
Who doesn't even get a name or anything. So he's like, when these two people show up, you know it's serious. And I'm like, no, it's when this one person shows up.
Yeah, the other person doesn't matter.
And whoever the fuck she brought with her. It's not like it was a big surprise that these two people, it's not like it was, oh, Mon Mothma's here, and she brought Talon Card. It's Mon Mothma and Elan Sleaze Beganiano.
Biggie, biggie, goo-doo.
Beganiano is the son of Elan Sleaze Begano. He changed the family name to avoid the embarrassment of his dad.
The embarrassment of his dad, who rethought his life.
Yeah, eventually did rethink his life, but it was too late. He'd already gotten those.
It was too late. He'd seen everything.
He already had those old-timer face tattoos. All right. So yeah, it's 3PO. 3PO, their predicament that they're flying randomly into space has been solved off screen because a dude is wandering around on their ship now.
Yep, and it is the captain of the Pure Sabacc, which I remember from the game. There's a ship in here called the Pure Sabacc, though it's not what this guy is flying.
No, this guy's flying a cargo ship. The Pure Sabacc is a TIE Striker.
Yeah, I was like, hey, wait a minute.
So there's just two ships in the universe with that name, which isn't too surprising, because Pure Sabacc is basically the equivalent of saying Blackjack or Royal Flush.
Yeah.
So it's not a big surprise that it's a name. I think Pure Sabacc... Sabacc means you have a natural positive or negative 23 in your Sabacc hand?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So it's not the Idiot's Array.
No.
You could also name a ship that if you were a moron.
If you were a moron.
Pure Sabacc doesn't have that idiot in the name.
No.
So the Pure Sabacc is piloted by a dude who, of course, reminds Han Solo, or C-3PO, of Han Solo.
Yes.
Just because he's a smuggler.
Ah, you remind me of Han Solo. You also remind me of... everyone else. You remind me of Luke Skywalker as well.
And if Skywalker were here, you'd remind him of Yoda.
And if Yoda was here, you'd remind Yoda that it's time to nap.
He was quite old, you know. So, this dude is named Captain Bortruck, which made me think he's probably an orc.
Yes. Captain Bortruck. I'm here to get some guffins.
You're gonna join the Grand War. So Bortruck's just sort of leisurely stomping around. The problem is, I thought he was an orc, but there's a one-sentence line in this book that's, Bortruck was human.
Yes, there is.
Yeah. As if you were going to get worried about that.
They're like, oh, wait, we named him Bortruck. Hold on. Bortruck was not an orc.
Hang on. Then the people are just going to think he's a goblin or something.
Riptooth Bortruck was not an orc.
Riptooth Bortruck. He's captain of the speed demons, he is.
I got my metal claw.
First thing we're going to do is paint this ship red.
It goes faster.
I wish Bortruck was an orc. In fact, you know what? I'm just going to retcon that.
In fact, you know what? Fuck it.
Bortruck's a space orc. It's done.
We've got orcs now.
This is the first orc in Star Wars. Bortruck's stomping around the inside of this random scout yacht. Kind of demanding, making demands and issuing questions.
Making demands, issuing questions, yeah. Questioning demands.
Questioning issues.
Issuing questions.
A whole variety of things. And we learn right away here that 3PO literally cannot say no to a orc.
He's just a droid who can't say no.
God damn.
Yeah, that's right. You fuck.
That was brilliant. Why are you calling me a fuck? I am legitimately impressed. I'm on your side here. But yeah, it turns out that 3PO is not allowed to say no to people.
Well, no to humans.
It does say
no
to humans.
That's why it specifically says that he was a human.
How racist were the programmers of 3PO? It was Anakin.
Yeah. He can't say anything wrong or bad to humans.
I wonder if they meant this, to leave it that way. Like, literally, 3PO has to be nice to humans. Or if they probably meant sentience.
Nope. Because it says
given
humans.
It says he can't disobey the instructions of humans. Bortruck is human. Well, we're going to have to amend that, though.
He can't
say no to space orcs.
He can't say no to humans, and also he's not going to say no to a fucking orc.
I mean, shit, no. Half that dude's armor is made out of old protocol droids.
Shit, yeah, he'd be melted down into gold teeth.
Yep, so better say yes to this guy. Bortruck basically is very obviously here to just take this ship and anything on it.
Like, 3PO's wandering around just giving him the tour, and every time Bortruck has anything, he's like, yeah, uh-huh, yeah, I'm going to steal this. I'm definitely not here to help. Anyway.
I mean, I like the 3PO's like, of course, please help us get us to the military base on Cyblock 12. And he's like, yeah, uh-huh, sure, whatever.
Yeah, that's
and again, as two droids, you can't say no to me, right? Like, so if I could just take this ship, it's just mine. This is why you can't have droids fly a ship anywhere, is because they'll just have to give it to whoever stops them.
Which is weird to me, because it also says that, like, 3PO couldn't argue with him either. Not even just disobey a command, but, like, couldn't argue with him. And I go, that's must be new, because
3PO's pretty argumentative.
He was a little bitch baby about everything all the time. So the fact that he can't just be like, oh, no, that's terrible. Please don't do that.
The odds of me letting you steal the ship are 5,721 to 1. You bitch.
And then he just pulls out a gun and shoots him.
And then he pulls out a cigarette.
Yes.
Sassy 3PO out. But no, this isn't Sassy 3PO, because
Bortruck is bullying him around
yeah.
and is going to shove Marcopius into space, just the whole unit he's in.
Oh, my God. So Marcopius has been, like we mentioned earlier in the previous episode,
shoved into a freezer somewhere.
He's in a freezy doodle so that he won't infect anyone with the Death Seed Plague. And the moment that Bortrock learns what's going on with Marcopius, he's like, yeah, okay, great. Help me. At this point, he's a space orc with that voice. Hey, yeah, like a Norm Macdonald voice.
He's a Norm Macdonald the space orc.
Yeah. Hey, you. Anti-grav lifters, help me get this thing out of the ship.
Yeah.
Yeah, see? Yeah. Come here, Muggsy.
No. The whole weird thing about this where 3PO is like, this is really disrespectful. And while I personally do not give a fuck what happens to a dead body.
It would be perfectly fine if he was stewed and fed to other humans.
That would be great as long as, you know, you made sure he didn't have any infections. Or
and, if, and of course, if the stew was delicious. And
of course, if it was displayed elegantly.
Yeah, if it had aesthetic appeal.
And this is my aesthetic.
Yeah. As if he's just Hannibal Lecter on the inside. If it weren't for those pesky three laws of robotics.
Oh, yeah. No, if it wasn't for a restraining bolt, fucking he would be cooking up people left and right.
That would explain the droid 000 from the Expanded Universe. The black C-3PO who was an assassin.
Yeah.
Okay, but anyway, Bortrock eventually comes around to R2, who of course is squealing and complaining and being like, hey, I'm a droid that has some kind of sense.
I have a droid kind of that can say no. Yeah.
Which Bortrock just sort of flips him around, opens up the back of his head, and takes out his will to do things.
Yeah, he's just like, and let's flip your switch from don't do stuff to do stuff, and there we go.
Yep, all set. No problem. All right, you two, go get on my ship. And then they do, and 3PO never quite puts it together that they're being stolen. It's the last line of this chapter.
Well, yeah, I mean, throughout the whole thing, he's basically like, oh, yes, finally, we're being saved, and he tries to tell Bortrock, he's like, oh, when you take us to Psyblock, I can't promise you anything, but you'll definitely get rewarded for the information we have.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they get onto a ship, and he has clearly just looted the planet.
Yeah, because Duren, the nearby planet, is currently in the middle of a civil war, so he just escaped with a bunch of valuables.
So he's got a whole big thing of, like, silver and gold and jewelry and art pieces and furniture,
frankincense and myrrh,
a couple of people.
Yeah, he's just stolen a bunch of shit from the planet, a whole bunch of religious iconography and gold coins in particular.
Well, yeah, because the religious iconography is all like expensive nonsense. It's just like, what is this? Oh, it's platinum inlaid with jewels.
Yeah, so he's got a bunch of that crap. 3PO immediately identifies all the value of it. That's the whole thing where he's like, yes, factoring in the fact that they are currently at war, which would raise the price of artifacts off planet, I assume you have between 21 and 23 million credits on board.
Ooh,
what sort of person are you? And he's like, I'm obviously a pirate who's taking your shit.
I'm obviously some kind of asshole. Anyway, no, I was...
I'm holding it for people.
I'm holding.
Yeah, he says he's like a holding... company like an offshore bank, basically.
It was, the people there, because war was happening, they decided it was time to get rid of all of these, so I took it off their hands.
Mm-hmm. And at this point, he's like, all right, R2, come with me. C-3PO, you got to stay in this room.
My nav computer is fucked up, so I ripped one out of your ship.
Yeah.
And I'm going to take R2-D2.
And 3PO, after he leaves the room, he spends some time calculating the value of everything in there, and then he goes to the wall, because there's just a computer in the wall, and he's like, okay, what's actually going on?
Hey, computer.
Hey, tell me things. And the computer's like, beep, 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 beep. And he's like, oh, God, your nav computer isn't broken, and we're not going to Psyblock 12. We're going to Celadon. Oh, dear me. We've been stolen.
Yeah, you're a giant dumb idiot.
Uh-huh, sure. It's not like he can do anything with that information anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, he just can't say no to people.
Yeah.
He's got a weak personality.
He needs
therapy.
He's just sad.
Yeah, it's not a good thing. Not a good look for 3PO.
Wow.
Anyway, the person who shows up at Han's house is Mon Mothma and her sad-looking bodyguard.
And boy howdy, if the first two pages of this isn't Mon Mothma's so fucking pretty. Let me tell you about how pretty Mon Mothma is.
Well, used to be.
No, goes through and is like, this is Mon Mothma and she's pretty. And then goes, she's weak, though. She's been infected with some poison, and now she's got these, and she's all saggy and
gaunt. Death hangs off her.
You can tell that she's all fucked up, but she's still a hot piece of ass.
I'm like, I remember what Mon Mothma looked like.
Yeah, it's weird that you would ever be like, oh, my God, she's so radiantly beautiful. I'm
Maybe the big white dress was selling him or something.
I don't know.
He seems to have a thing for that type.
I guess. The
big flowy white dresses.
Yeah, and, big white dress and hair and buns.
Yeah, up hair. That seems to be Han Solo's thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I see Mon Mothma, and I'm like, hi there, I'm Mon Mothma. Mrs. Dratch is not in school today. We're just going to pick up right from where she left off.
Guys, please, attention. Can I have your attention, please?
We're going to do roll call. I know it's funny. I'm sure you're trying to think of fun puns for Mon Mothma right now. You could just call me Mon.
It's fine.
Honestly, I'm just going to show you two episodes of DuckTales. But yeah, sure.
Weird thing for me is Han is also thinking about, like, ooh, Luke's on that planet or whatnot.
Because Callista. And he's like, why didn't they just listen to Callista?
Man, you know what? Callista was fucking hot, too.
That's right.
You see the lips on Callista?
There was a whole part where he was like, fucking, I remember Callista. Oh, man, husky voice like a teenage boy. Oh, shit, dude.
She had legs that went on for days and lips that wouldn't stop. And you're like,
eyes the color of rain.
Han, chill out.
Also, please do explain to me the color of rain, Han.
Yeah.
What is that nonsense? You mean Rain the Ninja from Mortal Kombat? She had purple eyes?
Yeah.
I'm on board with that. That's fine. That's going to be my new canon thing going forward.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
And I just assumed she had see-through eyes, and it was terrifying to look her in the face.
The biggest problem with all of that is that she's not in her own body. She's in a borrowed body from Dr. Joy or whatever.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Every time someone was like, ooh, Callista was so hot, I was like, no, you mean the doctor that she possessed was really hot.
Yeah, she traded bodies with some force doctor, and then she looked like that person.
Yeah.
But sure, whatever. It's fine. You know what? Maybe that's just the trans experience of Star Wars, where, like, you trade bodies with a doctor. It's like,
you trade bodies with a doctor and specifically.
And these people are being super progressive and being like, no, no, she's in that body. That's her body. She's fucking sweet and hot looking. And I'm a good person for saying so.
She's hot, and I would definitely fuck her. And I'm a good person for saying that I would go to Bone Town with my friend's ex.
The best thing, the most important progressive good thing I can say about her is that I would fuck her based on her teenage boy voice.
Yeah, there's a lot of Han's horny as fuck in this, because he's also like, oh man, I remember the last time I had sex with Leia in this room. And I'm like, Han, keep it in your fucking pants for like 5 seconds.
You know Chewbacca can smell it every time you get horny, right?
Ugh,
that's
God.
One of your gross hormones that he can pick up. And he's like, oh, God damn it. This life debt was the worst. How long do humans live?
Yeah, every time Han gets horny, and he's like, oh, it smells like Drakkar Noir in here.
And he's like, Mon Mothma, what the she looks like my grandmother, Han.
Oh, nah, she's so beautiful. God, have you seen that big white dress and updo?
That's my thing. That's my specific thing, is people who dress like a ghost from the neck down. Beehive up top, ghost on the bottom. That's Han's jam.
That's what Han Solo likes.
Han Solo likes big flowy dresses and taped down boobs.
Hi, I'm Han Solo. Do you sound like a teenage boy? I'm into it.
Contact me on LinkedIn. So Mon Mothma's here to basically just explain what's happening. The fleet has disappeared off damn Chorios.
Yeah, no one knows what was actually going on, and they don't know what to do. Fucking Riki, the other guy, is deathly ill.
Oh, Riakon.
Riakon.
Riakon's actually a character from the movies. Like, he's actually one of the generals who shows up.
Riakon?
So Riakon is deathly ill because one of the synth droids apparently got to him and gave him that death seed. Because they mentioned that that was the plan back at Beldorian.
Well, they said
house.
That he was going to go into a coma.
Yeah, I think whoever's
They didn't say he was going to get the death plague.
No, and it's important he goes into a coma because that way they can't resolve politically what the next step is.
Yeah, because if Leia is gone and this dude is incapacitated, instead of a chain of command that goes beyond two people,
mm-hmm.
it's if these two people are gone, then we have to decide it with a Senate vote. And the Senate is currently at each other's throats.
Yes. So that basically this is the plan working. But the whole thing about Riakon being sent into illness is tossed off in a one sentence description.
You're like, anyway, this guy's going into a coma. That doesn't matter.
That's unfortunate. Anyway, let me list a bunch of places and senates and so on. And then Han's like, well, couldn't we just fake like hologram transmissions of Leia? Trust me, I've got a lot of holograms of Leia. And she's like, no, two people have already tried that. One of them was found as a fake. It was probably the Daystar Institute because there was a bunch of shit about sentience. And the other one was probably the Tervesig people because they're into slavery, and it was
basically a real shitty
hollow of Leia.
Hollow being like, I love slavery.
Yeah. Hi there. I'm Princess Leia, and I love bandy slaves.
Yeah, it was just Real nonsense, and I love the idea of that going out.
I like the idea that it played backwards at first. They got it wrong. Runyup von Hirnfuhrer.
Oh, oh yeah, no, that's someone on the Senate.
Runyup von Hirnfuhrer. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. Well, at this point, we get a list of senators who are doing various things, including my favorite guy, Q-Varks.
Oh, Q-Varks.
I was really hoping for Q-Varks to turn out to be some kind of like robot man from the trade commissions or something. He's a Mon-Cal.
Yeah, it's weird.
And his name is Q, the letter Q, dash Varks.
Yeah, I was thinking Q-Varks sounds like a Nalronian.
I mean, we know one Mon-Cal's name. We only really know the one. And it's, you know, Akbar.
Well, we know a couple more.
Yeah, we know a couple more now. But
yeah.
The first one is Akbar. And Akbar, I mean, I guess if Ak was a letter, it could be like Ak-Bar.
Ak-Bar?
Yeah, maybe. You know what? Fine. I'm fine with it. It just doesn't seem like it should be spelled in that robot way.
No.
But yeah, Q-Varks is involved somehow that I don't care to describe. So the two of them are basically planning what they're going to do. Han is being tasked with, because they can't do an official response.
Oh, no, because not only can't they go through official channels because everything's all fucked up with the Senate, but if they, like, admit that Leia is missing, then it'll fuck things up even more.
Yeah. So Mon Mothma's here to plan a secret mission, and she's like, all right, Han, what do we need? And he's like, well, I'll go get Lando. Lando's going to have his own ship.
Obviously, I'm going to need Lando, and I don't know why, but I will obviously need Lando.
I like to think about it based on the movie Solo at this point, and then he just wants to get Lando because it would piss Lando off.
He's like, well, first off, I need Lando. Why? Because that's hilarious.
Because Lando won't want to do it.
Because he's going to be like, please don't make me do this.
Please, Han, I just do not like you. Hey, buddy, remember when you sold me to Vader? I'm going to make you pay for the rest of your fucking life.
But then we get a rattling off of every
minor luminary
minor
from previous Jedi
books. Who's like, oh, well, I'll also need Kip Duron.
Yeah, you need to get me Kip Duron and Wedge Antilles if he's available. And are you okay with me bringing Mara Jade in on this?
Why? Why are you bringing Mara Jade
in
on
he
this?
He says specifically that Mara Jade is the best at quartering up a sector. That she's really good at finding people in areas, which makes sense because you probably don't know Mara Jade's
I don't
history.
Know anything about Mara Jade outside of she's got red hair and she's feisty.
Her official title was the right hand of the Emperor.
Uh huh.
Or the Emperor's fist or the Emperor's hand or something. I think it's just the Emperor's hand. And she was like his private assassin.
Mm hmm.
So that's. And then it turns out way later that she was the right hand of the Emperor. And there was a left hand of the Emperor, too.
Ooh.
But yeah, so she's good at finding people and killing stuff. That's her jam. And he's like, yeah, you need to get Kip Duron. You need to get this person, and don't tell anyone anything and give them all ships and have them meet me at this coordinate or whatever, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
That's his plan.
I'm gonna get the fucking Falcon. I'm going to get Lando and I'm going to laugh at him. And then we're going to meet up.
I'm going to finally get my degree.
And we get descriptions of how Mon Mothma is basically FDR at this point.
Yeah, she's
where, like, no one is allowed to see that she is actually weak.
Mm-hmm.
So she has canes that she'll use to walk, but not if anyone can see her.
I think my favorite part of this whole description here is when the two of them are sitting down and having this conversation and a wooden droid comes in.
Yeah. Oh, there's like a wood panel droid.
Yeah. There's like a 1970s style green wood panel droid that trundles in with a
your drinks.
Sir. It's the kind of droid that like Cousin Polly had in Rocky IV. But he's like, yeah, of course the droids in this house have to look like they're part of the house because that's how you have expensive ass droids.
Yeah. It's expensive in order to have your droid be a Woody.
Yeah. Well, it's expensive to get a Woody these days.
Yeah, real expensive.
Which is
for
weird because apparently Han is a Woody all the fucking time.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, this wood panel droid comes trundling in with a glass of wine for the Senate. Oh no, sorry,
hot
a
cocoa.
Mug of hot cocoa for Mon Mothma and a glass of beer for Han.
Yep.
Sure. I mean, I think he was drinking a beer when we first saw him, but it feels weird to have beer be mentioned as a word in Star Wars.
Well, it feels weird to have hot cocoa be a thing
that
that's mentioned.
That isn't the first time that's happened.
I know. It just feels weird.
There's a book where Luke is given hot cocoa, and he's like, what an interesting drink that Winter has introduced me to. Hot cocoa. It appears to be made by filtering milk and chocolate together and then heated. Marshmallows are added. It's just like, oh my God, what the fuck is this? I forget what book that is, and someone's going to tell us, because people have been telling me all day what the... where the spice mine stuff happened.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving forward, Han's going to launch his secret mission. He needs the Falcon to do it. But yeah, my favorite part was this little description of the two of them sitting down. And then when the hot cocoa arrives, Mon Mothma shivers. And so Chewbacca goes and finds one of Leia's shawls and gives it to her. She's like, aw, thanks, Chewbacca. You and I have a private friendship outside of all this bullshit.
You're my friend.
Yeah.
We talk in private, away from Han, where I can treat you like an actual person instead of the family dog.
Like, it's not just subtext, it's text. She's like, looks warmly at him and is like, "Ah, Chewbacca, my old friend who I've experienced many things with. Yes, I did deny you a medal that one time, but otherwise, you and I have been through a lot, you and me, Chewbacca. Please cancel this life debt." We could actually use you as something other than the big furry thing standing behind Han.
Yeah. You're actually useful in so many ways when you're not just having to follow Han around and save his dumbass.
Anyway, the chapter all comes to a boring end when Han's like, "And I gotta start pre-travel flight plans on the Millennium Falcon, my ship with hidden depths."
And 120 pages in, still no Lando.
Well, he's mentioned.
Yeah, but like, he's on the back cover of the book as a main character is Lando. And it's 120 pages and he has not shown up yet.
For a second, I thought you meant that there was a picture of him on the back of the book. And I was like, oh, that's bad optics.
Oh,
that's a problem.
Oops, a daisies.
Don't do that. But there isn't, because none of these books, unless they are about Lando, have Lando on them.
No.
It's always just Luke, Han, and Leia. And sometimes they look a little older than they did in the movies, and usually they don't.
Usually not. Usually it's like, it's 30 years later, and they look exactly like the movies, because that's the only picture I got to go off of.
Yeah, that's what happened in this one. So, anyway, that's chapters 5 and 6. Bunch of wheels spinning in some drocks.
That's right. It's fucking 40 more pages, and what we got was Luke found a farm town, and Han's gonna go try and do something. It's not even Han did stuff. It's we set up Han to maybe do something later.
Yeah. But if you're worried about whether or not he's in a good apartment with great carpeting, don't be.
Oh, don't worry about that, because we know all about the balcony. We know about the greeting room.
The pool.
Ugh, boy, howdy, do we know all about that.
I'm really glad that at least his ardor didn't get directed towards Winter in that scene, because presumably she's in a bathing suit.
Well, presumably, as well, he would be into it because it looks exactly like his wife.
Yeah, she looks like a white-haired Princess Leia. So it's surprising where he's not like, hey, you know,
she's all
gone,
naked.
She's all, my wife's all gone and stuff, and I need comfort in this dark time.
I need someone to comfort me in the penis.
Very well, sir. I will meet you in the penis with a cup of cocoa.
Ah, yes. This was Palpatine's penis.
Well, obviously, it's just yet another place that Shizor owned on Coruscant.
Yeah.
Welcome to the penis, the finest nightclub in all of Coruscant.
Ugh. No.
The full title is The Big Green Penis.
No, thank you, no.
Welcome to the throbbing green penis.
Yeah, I'm leaving, bye.
Would you like some fleek eels?
There you go.
All right, we're done. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Expounded Universe. We'll keep slogging away at this book, because Lord knows that's how we do.
God, this book is... I mean, I know some people were like, oh, man, the last book, you got to read something that was actually fun to read. I can't wait till you get back to bad books. Oh, my God, this book is... it hurts. Like, I read one chapter and just put it down, and then I stare at the book. Like I want it to know that I'm disappointed in it.
I do like the part in the chapter where Han looks outside the balcony of his apartment, and it's like he sees the space of Coruscant where starlight endlessly pours out in rivulets and whorls, unleashing its glowing bounty upon his eyes and creation. I was like, oh my God, just say there's space out there.
Ugh.
Fine.
Oh yeah. Well, there's a point where Han is super spooked out by the idea of getting caught somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Like if. Because one of the things they mentioned for what might have happened to Leia is something might have happened to their coordinates and they just jumped randomly.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like, that's the most terrifying thing I could think of, to just be stuck somewhere in space and have no idea where I am or how to get back.
Yeah.
And so...
That's legitimately scary.
Yeah, I was like, it's amazing to me that no one ever mentions this. Like, this is the first time anyone in Star Wars is like, do you know space is terrifying?
No, it isn't. You got to learn about Project Outbound Flight sometime. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. And you know what? There's bonus content a-coming.
Ooh, is it a-coming?
It's a-coming. It's a-coming. And it's a-coming fast.
Ooh, it's a-coming hard.
I'm going to do a whole episode on the throbbing green penis.
Oh, well, while you're on that, what are you going to say for your bonus content?
While I'm on the throbbing green penis, I actually will not say what I'm going to do for my bonus content, but I will tell you how you can get it. If you want that,
you can get it.
If you want that sweet bonus content, all you have to do is go to patreon.com/systemmastery and support us at the $2 level. It usually adds up to about $4 and occasionally $6 a month, but it never, ever, ever goes higher than that. I want to make sure people feel comfortable knowing that we will not pull a Spoonie on you.
We are very honest.
Yeah.
We don't do anything stupid.
It's religiously about $4 a month to unlock the, about $4 because twice a year it's $6 a month. That's how I'm going to put it to unlock the bonus content for Star Wars, where you will get to learn all about things from Wikipedia that we thought were funny.
Things that we didn't know or we thought were weird.
Yeah.
Things we want to bring to you.
And then we'll bring them to your attention and we'll tell some more of our good old fashioned joke style jokes.
Good old fashioned joke style jokes.
Yep. The kind of jokes that are joke styled.
These jokes have jokes in them.
No pun style jokes here.
Oh no. Goodness no. No observation style jokes here.
None of that. Nothing in the musical category of joke either.
Oh no.
No filk.
Just joke style jokes.
Just the classic Gilbert Gottfried-esque joke style joke.
Indeed. Two men walk into a bar style jokes.
Perfect. Once again, patreon.com/systemmastery to unlock that bonus content. There are other levels that are available, but I'll let you discover them for yourself. Head on down to the Patreon. Take a look around.
Discover it for yourself. Let your hands wander.
Yeah.
Let yourself just graze over the sensual bits of our Patreon.
Flip our Patreon over and over in your mouth. Remember, don't bite it. Let it melt on your tongue. That's the proper way to taste our Patreon.
Our Patreon has hints of tannin and cherries.
It's redolent of fresh-cut grass. Heady, as if pencil shavings were freshly dropped from the bottom of a pencil sharpener. I can do wine descriptions.
It's the color of rain.
I can do wine descriptions for fucking days because of my Trader Joe's history.
You can really taste the reindeer in every drop.
It's got a pleasing finish all over your face. the other one was that's right, this particular red has a pleasant oaky afterbirth. All right, so once again, that's patreon.com/systemmastery, or you can find us at systemmasterypodcast.com or as System Mastery on Twitter, Facebook, Gmail, Reddit. If you follow our Twitter, you can get onto our Discord. If you go to our Discord and you're a patron, you get special bonus colors, access to secret hidden rooms just for patrons. It's the best. And you can find all that stuff by just going online and looking around.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for listening.
We will be back in another week with more.
And until then, I've been Elan Sleazebagiano.
And let me tell you about these death sticks. The sensual white swirls around to the smoky afterbirth.
And if you want to buy some, you can meet me in the men's room at the throbbing green penis.
Smoking in the men's room!